first of all, let's whiz over and have a Shapiroette with Bruce. Bruce, the story is changing by the hour.
Well, indeed, just as I was about to go to bed last night, the news broke of your prime minister's involvement, which means, you know, ironically, that Australia now is both at the beginning and possibly the closing chapter of Trump's problems. You know, after all, it was a tip from Mr. Downer to intelligence officials in the U.S. that first opened up the Pandora's box of Russian involvement in 2016, that led to the Mueller probe. And now, with the world having turned with remarkable speed last week, comes the news that President Trump has been trying to enlist Scott Morrison in
Can you bang your phone? You're phasing in and out.
How's this? Comes the news that that, you know, Scott Morrison is being enlisted by Trump in the president's continuing efforts to discredit the intelligence community and the Mueller probe.
But Bruce, Australia has a long, proud history of interfering in the politics of other nations. We're gung ho for regime change.
Well, you know, it's actually kind of an interesting thing. Of course, Americans have periodically, American officials have periodically used political information in international private negotiation like this to advance their political interests before. I think of Henry Kissinger in 1968 torpedoing American peace negotiations with President Tu in South Vietnam so that Richard Nixon could be elected. But there's nothing quite like the details that we are seeing emerge drip by drip, day by day now in this latest Trump scandal. You know, the idea of a president of the United States not only threatening the president of a sovereign country and but conducting his own, doing his own shakedown, first of all, with the prime minister, President Zelensky, and secondly, conducting this sort of private campaign of enlisting foreign officials to defend his own political agenda really shows a kind of, well, what in South Africa they used to call state capture, you know, the use of the executive branch to advance entirely personal political or financial interests. And
so this is the tipping point or a potential tipping point?
Well, certainly, you know, everything is different than a week ago, right? Democrats, Speaker Pelosi, reluctant a week ago to pursue impeachment, now are all in for a narrowly focused Ukraine investigation, at least, and they're openly calling it an impeachment investigation. More significantly, well, not more significantly, but just as significantly, we're getting some hints of Republican waffling. The person to watch here, one of the people to watch, is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who, when asked what would happen if the House passed articles of impeachment, made it clear that he was not going to block an impeachment trial. He said, our rules require that if the House passes articles of impeachment, the Senate conducts a trial. We can't change that. We're not going to change that. This means he's not going to put himself in the way. He's not going to stall an impeachment
trial. We're talking about someone who's evolved into one of the major apologists for Trump, aren't we?
We are. And that's why this, what looks like a mild walk back, on his previous role, let's say, in the Merrick Garland nomination for the Supreme Court, is really significant. Equally important, there are some polls now showing, there are multiple polls now showing, first of all, a narrow majority of the public favoring impeachment proceedings. And don't forget, these are not up to the minute. These will be polls from last week. And secondly, showing a rise in support for impeachment among unaffiliated voters and even among Republicans, where it's moved outside of the margin of error from, I think, 8 to 17% in the course of the last week. That doesn't mean that most Republicans are there. But if you look back at, let's say, the Nixon Watergate precedent, there are these moments when momentum shifts, when momentum changes. And then finally, I think there's one other kind of momentum change. There's little doubt that the president's use of that call with Ukraine raises sort of high crimes and misdemeanors questions. Everyone understands that. But equally, his response, the threats to the whistleblower, whom he all but threatened, all but encouraged his supporters to enact violence upon. His declaration yesterday that Representative Adam Schiff, chair of the Intelligence Committee, is treasonous. These are the kind
the suggestions there'd be an outbreak of civil war.
Indeed, an outbreak of civil war. You know, the dancing around the edges of violence in multiple statements change the dynamic, raise the stakes, and they also, I think, have accelerated what is already a parade of leaks on this. The whistleblower's meticulous report is only the beginning. We are now, I think, going to see all sorts of officials in the administration understanding that whatever protection the president has, they don't have. They are going to start, and already have started, leaking like mad. The Australia information is one example of that.
Okay, Trump's off the Richter scale, even by his own standards. Last week we were talking about this. I felt that whatever happens to Trump, there will be, in a sense, comparable level of damage to Biden. Forget the, you know, whether or not his son was naughty. The fact is that he will be besmirched by this.
Well, it certainly has affected him, and I think the original calculation by President Trump and by Rudy Giuliani, the president's lawyer, were that it was all worth any hassle over this little whistleblower thing if we could get Joe associated with Ukrainian corruption. You know, in the last few days, I think we've seen this narrative fade. Certainly, though, the president is going to keep repeating it. And look, the reality is that Hunter Biden, Vice President Biden's son, thought he could make a killing by getting in bed with a Ukrainian oligarch. He's not the first person to do that. The fact that there is no evidence of illegality needs to be repeated over and over again. But it does, you know, reinforce the picture that Joe Biden is part of an older political order, of a political order that was very much in bed with financial interests. You know, it may not be fair, but there is just enough truth in it to damage the Biden case. Though, you know, let's back up and remember that Joe Biden doesn't need any help in damaging his case. He's already made enough stumbles in the campaign that I think the association of Hunter Biden with Ukraine is kind of a pebble on a scale that already is, you know, fairly weighted.
Elizabeth Warren is now, you know, very pro-impeachment, isn't she?
Well, she, you know, prophetically perhaps, came out full bore for impeachment several weeks before this scandal broke. So she now is in the position of having been at the leading edge of a campaign that the Democratic Party and Speaker Pelosi have now embraced. And her whole pitch, of course, has been about the corruption of governments, the capture of politics by America's version of oligarchs, and her calls for reform. So as this plays out and as the presidential race solidifies, I think, you know, if any Democrat stands to gain, it is probably Warren from this. But, you know, it's also on the, you could also say that this is going to distract from the substance of Warren and Sanders and Biden's policy proposals as they head into what is now a very important 3 months of the primary season, headed up to the first Iowa caucuses early next year.
Michael Colburn will be joining the program shortly, in just a moment, in fact, and he'll be telling us about Ukraine's response to the phone call and matters arising. But Bruce, thanks for that. We should also remind the listener that impeachment is remarkably rare in American political history. This will be only the fourth by my count.
Well, only the third. Nixon was not impeached. Nixon resigned prior to articles of impeachment being voted. So it really was just Andrew Johnson after the Civil War and the Reconstruction period, Bill Clinton, and now perhaps Donald Trump.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce Shapiro, Exec Director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.